Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, listeners and viewers. Welcome back to episode 2 with Joe Bouvan, who's talking to us from EdAssist and talking about the world, the disrupted world of education, specifically for adult learners. And as you learned in the last episode, Jill is an expert, has a PhD in adult education, and has been working in this industry for over 20 years. And where we left off, Jill, was talking about, you know, where this is all going. And the question that I wanted to start episode 2 with is, as you're seeing people going after these very specific skills, it also seems to me that whether through attention deficit or through just a need to get done with things, the traditional semester may be something, a thing of the past. And why I say that is because for those who didn't really think they were going to be able to make it for a four-year degree 20, 30, 40 years ago when I was in school, you know, the alternative was a community college. So it was the distinction was simply 4 years or 2 years. Now we're actually looking at the semester and saying, wow, I mean, with micro-credentials, with badges, with certificates and certification programs, it may be ongoing rolling admissions and maybe not semester long. I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, this is one that's also not always easy to explain to some of our corporate partners because there are so many modalities, right? So we love, and it is figuring out, that's also why I think I mentioned I started off as a mentor or coach, you know, over 20 years ago. And I think that's so important for learners to have that guide on the side to understand, is competency-based learning right for me? Is self-directed learning right for me? Do I not want to be on a traditional model? What does 5 weeks mean? How many classes or how much work am I going to have to put in if I'm taking 5 week courses? So really unpacking that, because we always know something sounds really good, but is it right for us and for our lifestyles? So, you know, the adult has so many things to choose from right now. The modality being, you know, face-to-face, online, or blended is almost a thing of the past. It's that, to your point, that time frame, how long it's going to take. And I think something else that's interesting, because you mentioned that in regard to, or tied that to micro-credentials, I think we also oftentimes think like, oh, I'm going to take a boot camp. It's going to be 6 weeks and I'm going to be a scrum master. Many of these boot camps are very intensive, as they should be, so that they have the skills to go into these jobs and, you know, can be 16, 24 weeks, a year. So I think there's also kind of misinformation around what these short form credentials are. They're not always as short as they're meant to be, but you will complete them faster than a degree.
Well, with this level of complexity, you know, private, for-profit, online, in-person, hybrid, and then, you know, the distinction between a degree-bearing or non-degree-bearing. You know, when you mix this all up, how would you be advising a young person who stepped away, wants to get their education back on track, and is contemplating that $64,000 question, which is, do I want to pay $64,000 for a college education, or are there other things that will get me what I want? And how would you answer that question?
Well, first of all, if it's someone who's stopped out and coming back, I think, or someone who's not, I think you can look at, can I earn to learn? Could I work for a company who's going to pay for at least a portion of my educational journey? And then I think it's really like, it's having a conversation about what that person's goals are. I love the idea of short form learning in some cases to start, because you can put your foot in the water, you can try learning again, you can get yourself on an education schedule. Another great example of that is like a self-directed experience through, say, a Straighter Line, taking some gen ed courses. But self-direction takes a lot of, like, you got to go sit down, you got to study. Right. So figuring that out about yourself. Do you need more of a constraint around you have to log into a course 3 times a week? So I think it's thinking about, do you want to dip your toe in the water and try something short form? With that, I also always say, would love to introduce you to some of those that would stack into a credential. You may not think you want an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree now, but to spend 16 weeks, a year on a short form credential and have no opportunity for credit down the road, I also feel like can kind of cut learners short of their journey, because they might not realize, they may not think they ever want to go back to school, then have a great experience in a certification program and say, I'm ready to do the whole thing. I just got a career bump at work. I just got a pay bump and I'm confident I can do it. So thinking through that ability to stack is becoming so important.
Well, it also seems to me that Assist has created an interesting niche where you're helping corporations to understand how to deliver these educational experiences to people. And in helping them, you're becoming a de facto admissions arm of the corporation, because you're helping people to make some very important decisions. I know in the early days with Walmart, when they were launching Live Better You, they had real issues with people coming to their website and not being able to differentiate all the educational offerings they had. What should I be doing? And so a lot, while online does provide a certain learning experience that makes it more flexible for people to continue their learning, there are also limitations. And one of them is in helping people to navigate that. So you mentioned earlier, you're advising your clients, corporations, on how to do this. And what do you find they know or don't know about the whole experience of extending these kinds of educational benefits to their teams?
Well, Ron, that's a slippery slope for me to answer.
You can answer it without pointing to any names, and we'll keep it honest.
So here, it's really interesting, too, when we look at most corporations, there's this almost like great divide. There's the learning, like, say, a chief learning officer, and then there's HR, and that's like the CHRO and talent acquisition and benefits management. So depending on if we can bring those two together, it's phenomenal. So depending on who we're working with and how we can bridge that understanding, it's very fruitful. Some of our benefits managers like know an exceptional amount or think they know what they need to get to and rely on us to suggest how to get there. And that's what we spend most of our time doing. It's interesting, like a lot of our healthcare companies, I had mentioned on episode one, almost 30% are healthcare. They have a high dependency on community colleges. It works well for nursing programs. They tend to go, whether it's a setup cohort or not, they're in there together, they can go together. And a lot of our healthcare companies like to give back to their local communities. So
so that makes a lot of sense there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're a part of their communities, right? Like everyone's coming in to see them at their healthcare centers, and they're giving back through going to their community colleges. And it's just a phenomenal ecosystem in those areas. I think in terms of, you know, last year we saw about a 10% increase in the non-credit learning. So we're more and more having conversations about that. For the majority of our clients are interested in that because they don't see it maybe as the end all or the replacement of a degree, but as an opportunity to get another skill, like I mentioned before, to kind of tag along with a degree. If they're not yet comfortable saying, we don't need degrees, they are seeing that there's a benefit that maybe it's not a master's degree. And I also say, like, this is tied to generations in the workforce too. I mentioned on episode one, our younger Gen Z, they're like quickly upskilling through bits and micro credentials, maybe don't want to go back. Maybe they have student loans and they don't want to even contribute to another degree. And then our generations who are staying on in the workforce longer and longer don't want to go back and get an MBA if you need them to get a skill. They don't want to sit through 2 to 3 years of school, but would be happy likely to get a certification. So it's also thinking of how the workforce has changed and how all of these credentials can fit the changing needs of your workforce.
If you're listening or viewing this podcast, I'm Ron Stefanski at Disrupt Ed, and we're talking with Jill Boubin from EdAssist, and we're talking about this tremendously disrupted world of education. And hopefully for our listeners and viewers out there, you're getting a better sense of just how discombobulating it can be and how valuable people like Jill and her team are to helping people sort out, you know, what am I going to do here? Because the cost of education has gone up exponentially especially over the past two decades. And so we have to be smarter about how we pursue our educational journey in alignment with our own personal and professional needs. And I think that's a big part of it. So Jill, it sounds like you're working with a variety of players across the ecosystem. And if you were speaking to them and you were going to give them advice about how to be better at delivering their experience, what would you be telling your providers if you were assembled with an audience of them and they were there to say, tell us what we should be doing better? What would the answer be?
I love this question, Ron. I do this sometimes. I gave a talk last fall, like for going B2C to B2B. That was more for, you know, companies and boot camps, ed tech providers. So I think in general, and I just actually had this conversation on the Hill a couple of weeks ago, and thinking about how can we bridge the gap between post-secondary learning opportunities and corporate America? Can we literally bring them together in a room and say, you know, I hear corporate America like, no, this is what we need. And if you don't bring it to us, we're going to have it created for us. So it's thinking, I think it's really interesting, first of all, to start that conversation. But when I think about broadly, whether it's an ed tech provider or an institution, it's looking at outcomes. I mean, it's not even in adult learning. We know at adult institutions, it's hard with persistence and retention rates. So we look at those, but it's looking at more so persistence to me in terms of that outcome. It's also looking at their wraparound supports. Are you providing the same type of supports if you're online that you would on campus? Do you offer ELL, English language learning services? Do you offer some type of mentoring or student success, not just academic advising, but these wraparound supports we know that are so crucial to an adult learner's success? Now, when I'm talking to ed tech providers specifically, a lot of times I do get into, what are your outcomes? What are your pass rates on national exams? Is your offering linked to a national exam? You know, if you're thinking of like a Cisco certification or Google certs, like, is there anything with that? What is the modality? What are the hours? Like, I remember talking to one CEO, lovely, lovely person. And we were talking like every 3 months. I should have gotten consulting, Ron, but I didn't do it anyway. But I was saying, I'm like, okay, you changed your model, but now you're making adults come every Saturday from 9 to 5. Like, if that person has a family, it doesn't work. So right. Thinking through all these things that work for a typical working learner, it's not always, as I mentioned, that persistence and retention. A lot of it's those wraparound supports that make the adult successful.
So it sounds like if I were an adult learner, one of the first things I'd want to do is get your cell phone so that I could figure out specifically how to navigate this. And short of that, it sounds to me like what you are saying, though, is that adults need to talk with people and talk to whatever kind of academic support is available to kind of, you know, to kind of construct a pathway that works for them, because there are so many choices, good and bad, short and long. And you want that commitment to be, you know, a viable one at the end. You want to have an outcome that's desirable for the employer. Absolutely. And for the person, you know, the employee as well. So when you think about that, are there things that we're missing in the educational mix of opportunities that are out there where you think, wow, you know, an ed tech company coming out now where there's a lot of money being thrown at ed tech companies, what we really don't have that is really needed is X.
I think a lot of us, I don't think this is going away. I think a lot of us and a lot of corporations are going to be trying to figure out apprenticeship models. I think Jobs for the Future does a great job of consulting on these models and helping put the pieces together. They're a wonderful resource. But in terms of really connecting the dots, how do you set up an apprenticeship model? How is it not an intern model? What are the pieces that make it successful? The mentoring, placing them in a job, like all of that. I think there is a hole there. I also, interestingly, I just had a conversation with a company with Eleanor Cooper, the CEO of PathStream, and I was really excited about the work they're doing because they pivoted from just having boot camps to modularity that companies can create their certificate or certification based on their needs. So based on their desired outcomes, they have modularity to put together a program that works for them. So I would have said that was missing to have that, but there are some, there's some others in the space too. But really being able to adapt to a specific client's needs or company's needs is important. But I think even that first one, I think we're going to more and more be looking at apprenticeship models. I was with someone from the U.S. Auto Traders Association down in D.C., and he had said they currently have 10,000 job openings, and it's all in manufacturing. It's going to expand as we rely more and more on electric cars, and how are you making those parts? And so it's really like, how do we create these models that work? And some are doing great. You know, IBM has a great apprenticeship model that's phenomenal, but it's like, how do we teach others to do that?
Right. I think the issue is bringing that to scale. I think that we've been saying for a long time, Austria, Germany, Western Europe has great models for apprenticeships. But when we come to the US, it's not being done at scale the way it is being done abroad. I think it seems to me that when it comes to apprenticeships, some of it may have to do with the mentoring and the side-by-side learning that takes place. I think, you know, if you really think about online learning, it's rare the individual that can autopilot their education, who simply sits down and says, I'm going to go online. I'm going to do this by myself. Oh, I don't get this material. I'm going to go at it again tomorrow. No, we need human interaction. And how does EdAssist help bring that human interaction? Because you have such great partnerships with people. So obviously you're making that happen. And how would you share with our audience how you're making that happen?
Yeah, so we do. We have academic advisors. We have financial advisors. We have student success coaches. So we have troops with, and then we have groups that are live chat. Not everybody wants to pick up a phone. We do have phone services, but we have so many different types of advising and coaching that I think really make a difference for the employee. So they're not only relying on the institution or educational experience that they end up attending, they always know that there's someone at EdAssist, whether it's maybe they're just having a problem submitting their transcript and getting paid, or making sure that it's direct bill and they have no out of pocket, or it is on finances. We just had a great story run in USA Today this week here in the beginning of April about a woman that works for Yale New Haven Hospital. And while she wasn't eligible for student loan repayment through our financial coaching that she was eligible for, she saved over $300,000. So it's like those stories that are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. So we try to offer all those supports. And then what I would say that gets, we offer them, but then it's also relying on the partnership with the company and the company's communication out to its employees that they have those services available and how they can access them.
Well, if you've been listening or watching, this is Disrupt Ed with Ron Stefanski and Jill Bubin, who's joined me this afternoon to talk about education as a benefit. And Jill, you've provided so much insight. I can't believe we've flown through two episodes. But as we wrap here, I want to take you up on your offer. I think it would be great to have you back and to have one of the other women power people on the call with us. And that's, Lisa Schumacher from McDonald's. So
I'd love to.
I think we should line that up, because I think there's a lot more to what you're doing and how you unpack it. When you think about it, when you think about where McDonald's was in 2014 and how vilified they were and how their own employees were picketing their investment in their shareholders meetings. And now they've created the model of workforce development. They've created the model of supporting people on their educational journey with the idea that we don't want you here for your lifetime, but if you can stay 3 to 5 years and get some power skills and get some education wherever you left off, then we send you out better prepared for a future completely different than McDonald's. And that's a success for them. And so I think it would be really great. So we're putting Lisa on the spot here at the end of our episode to say, Lisa, you're coming back and you're joining Jill here because we have so much to share with our audience. Thank you, folks, for joining us today. Disrupt Ed is where we bring together a community of people who get to hear from the determined and the do-gooders out there who are really making a difference, who are thought leaders in this wide ecosystem of education. And they also have that secret GSD index, which is not only are they thought leaders, but they get shit done. And Jill is certainly one of those. So Jill, thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll look forward to having you and Lisa back on a subsequent show. Take care.
I love it. Thank you so much, Ron. We'll see you soon.